Wednesday, and welcome to Minute 148 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this week is Will Slater of Exploding Helicopter. Welcome back, Will.
Hello, Rob. Yeah, good to be back for another day, looking at another minute of the Great Escape.
Yeah, we've found some very interesting things the last 2 days. Let's see what else we can come up
with. Yeah, let's hope we haven't peaked. And now the downward slide. Well, let's make sure that's not the case.
They always say that Wednesday is hump day, so you know, you never know. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Minute 148 begins with the plane going airborne and ends with Hiltz riding towards freedom. So, as we've been discussing the last 2 days, Henley and Blythe have miraculously stolen a plane without either of them getting injured or getting shot, because there's nobody on this base. They found the one base around the country with nobody there. So that worked.
Yeah. Yep. Then the Luftwaffe are totally uninterested in this plane that is now, you know, just flying across Germany.
Exactly. So the plane takes off. And as you touched upon yesterday, the first thing I wanted to talk about today is the fact that nobody is in pursuit. Nobody whatsoever. I mean, yesterday we talked about the two guys in the traffic control tower. One of them's on the phone. He really must have been on the phone with his wife, because, you know, he didn't wake up the pilots, you know, to run out and, you know, try to catch this plane. Maybe that's why Henley chose this plane, that nobody would care.
Well, maybe these kind of, you know, German, the guard, and these guys in the air traffic control tower, maybe they got together and they just thought, you know what? We will be in big trouble if anyone finds out about this. Why don't we all just pretend it never happened? I mean, that plane they've stolen is a trainer. So, I mean, maybe they could just get away with, you know, just sort of pretending it the whole thing never happened.
It's very possible.
That's maybe why there's no pursuit, because they just realize, oh, you know what? We're going to be put up against the wall and shot here. So we'll just say, oh, it's that... Oh yeah, that train, it's off for maintenance. It, you know, no one ever sees it again. And yeah, the whole thing never happened.
It's very true. Now, I love watching the way that this plane takes off, because it doesn't go straight. He dips as he's going out. So once again, it shows that Hens is a much better scrounger than pilot.
I mean, can't we?
Apparently there's a reason he got shot down.
I mean, as we sort of said, you know, he is the scrounger. You know, perhaps he's got this, perhaps in his backstory, he's got this, you know, history of larceny. You know, perhaps he is a bit of a grifter. I mean, how much of a pilot is he really? I mean, this is, I think, you know, questions perhaps now need to be asked about his qualifications for being behind the controls here.
Ah, you know what? That, you just reminded me, maybe he's, you know, similar to, what's his name, Commander Shields? Commander from Bridge on the River Kwai, where he actually, you know, when he was captured, he pretended to be an officer.
Mm.
So maybe that's what it is. You know, maybe Henley is not really a pilot.
No. Ah. I think we need to get Christopher Reeve to lead an investigation into that.
I think that's going to be very difficult. To get either James Garner or Christopher Reeve to help out. Sorry, it was Shears. It was Commander Shears, not Shields. William Holden's role, Bridge on the River Kwai, where you know, he admits that he's just a little swab jockey, you know, that found a dead uniform of a dead officer, decided to take that, and hoping to get treated better. Maybe that's what happened with Henley. Ooh, that would be great.
I think we should keep a close eye on him for the rest of this week.
Yeah. Maybe
there'll be some more clues.
We'll see how good of a pilot he really is. So the plane takes off, and the cinematography here is amazing.
Mm.
The shot. I mean, this is Daniel Frapp, I think is the name of the cinematographer. Frapp, something like that. Daniel Fapp, sorry, was the cinematographer. And the shot of the plane against the, you know, above the trees, it's really beautiful to look at. The whole forest is it's a very lush forest. You know, it shows, you know, that they probably should have actually gone through the forest. It would have been, you know, they would have concealed themselves a little better. than being the plane above the forest.
Well, I think it's a feature of a lot of John Sturges's movies is the cinematography. I mean, you know, he's a lot of fantastically shot films, you know, The Magnificent Seven, you know, Bad Day at Black Rock. The Laura and Jake Wade is a film that I really like a lot. And again, the photography of landscape in that film is fantastic. So yeah, certainly, you know, John Sturges as a director definitely has, you know, a real eye for, you know, kind of widescreen, you know, how to use a widescreen, you know, how to get the most of that, you know, in a cinema feature film.
There's no question about that. I mean, it's great looking at the way that this is shot. I'm going to have to actually take a look at the Lon Jake Wade. That actually sounds very interesting.
Oh, it's a very, very good, very good film.
Right. No, it wasn't shot by Fat. Yes, it was great. Shot by Robert Surtees. That was the name of, I have to take a look at that for that one. So yeah, so we see the plane flying, and we see the two of them inside the plane, which is obviously very fake. They are not in a real plane. They are in a cockpit that's being moved back and forth.
Yeah, back projection. Well, it kind of, I was going to say it's moved on since then, but I was watching some stuff recently and I was thinking the back projection here is really very shoddy, but yeah. It's of its time, and I don't think it's particularly distracting. If you've watched a lot of films of this vintage, it's par for the course.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not something that bothered me until I watched it just as a minute.
Mm.
You know, I've seen it so many times that you just don't pay any attention. But when you're looking at it in much more detail, you will notice things that you didn't think of beforehand.
Definitely.
And first of all, we discussed yesterday about the score. At this point, they change the score, and we get a very optimistic beat of the music telling us, okay, these guys are now get free. You know, they're going in the right direction. Towards Switzerland. and then Henley gives Blythe a thumbs up. Now, I think James Garner forgot that, you know, Blythe is supposed to be blind. You wouldn't necessarily give a thumbs up to someone who's blind without saying something along the way. You know, he gives him the thumbs up and then he hand down and then he goes, next stop, Switzerland. Make up your mind. And he doesn't even catch himself. It's not as if he you know, gives him a thumbs up and then realizes, wait a second, he's not going to be able to see that. And then, oh, next stop, Switzerland. You know, it just completely flows.
Yeah, I think I guess it's for the audience's benefit. Well, certainly not meant to be for blinds.
Wait, the next stop, Switzerland, or thumbs up?
The thumbs up.
He gives a thumbs up right in front of Blythe's face. He doesn't give it. He doesn't put his hand out the window towards the, you know, the audience. That would have been really funny if he put his hand out to the audience. Here you go. I'm out of here. I've done it really well. And then after he says next stop Switzerland, so Blythe then begins smirking and smiling in a giddy way, which makes him actually look pretty scary. It's like a Hannibal Lecter type of laugh.
Yeah, some of his facial reactions here are a little odd, and I think it sort of touches on that aspect that we were talking about previously, where you know, it can be a bit tricky as a sighted actor, you know, playing a blind character, and I think, yeah, this is a moment that betrays that again, yeah, with those Hannibal Lecter faces that he's pulling.
Oh well, they couldn't get anything out, so they figured they'll let Donald Pleasance do something. Anthony Hopkins, wait, how old was he at the time? He was in his 20s at the time. So he might have actually fit in. Wait, he was born in 37.
Yeah, possibly.
So he was 25. Yeah.
Yeah, we could have definitely had him in this
thing. So many other movies, you know, in the 60s and 70s that you never would have noticed.
Well, in the 60s, he was mostly a stage actor. So, it wasn't until, I think, sort of really 70s that he started moving more over into films. But, you know, it would have been possible to have him in this, which would have been interesting for historical purposes, if nothing else.
Completely. So at this point, for this minute, at least, we're done with the two of them, because they do a nice fade between the two shots here.
Mm.
You know, we see them in the plane, smiling, looking for some fava beans.
A nice Chianti.
Exactly. And then we get to see another really nice landscape that is nice and quiet for a fraction of a second, and then the quiet is broken by the sound of a motorcycle.
Yes.
And we get to see a motorcycle ride through, and obviously we know who's on that motorcycle. With Steve McQueen, who obviously one of the prisoners in real life, you know, did something like this. You know, just driving my motorcycle in, you know, in your normal American, I wouldn't even call it uniform, but your American clothes in the middle of World War II, going towards the border.
Well, McQueen does look like he's in a Gap advert, doesn't he?
Yes.
In this particular film.
Completely.
And I think Gap actually used images of Steve McQueen in some of their old ad campaigns back in the 90s. I don't know if they were images of Steve McQueen from The Great Escape, but with his sweatshirt and car keys and his sort of aviator jacket, he's got that sort of worn in workwear look that utility chic, I think they call it. Sort of fits in with Gap's kind of raison d'etre as a brand.
Completely. And as the motorcycle is going by, it actually passes this barn.
Could you read what was on the barn? Because I tried, but I couldn't quite make it out.
Yes, I could. Now, first of all...
Excellent.
First of all, the most interesting thing about this barn is that the bottom three quarters of it are spray painted in black with two large swastikas next to them. Now,
just in case you were wondering what country we're in at this moment.
Exactly. Wait, what country is... And basically, not in this shot, but in a few seconds from now, you're actually able to read what it says on that barn. You know, so we'll get to that in a second. So he continues riding down this road. He reaches a crossroad, which is a funny crossroad, because on the one hand, the road continues going and you can see that he's at the border. You see all the guards at the border. You see the flags at the border. But the left-hand side of the crossroad looks like a dirt road. It looks like, okay, this is your last chance to escape trying to get border. You know? And he basically just stops there, which also is not very bright. And as he's stopping there, you see a lot of the guards that are standing around by the fence start to get a little suspicious. They're not suspicious until he stops. He stops, and then they actually can see who he is, and they start crowding around, walking towards where he is. And then we get a shot of two more motorcycles pursuing him down the road that he came from. And at that moment, you can actually read what is said on this barn. Now, once again, forgive me, everyone who speaks German. My German is atrocious. My pronunciation of German is worse. So it says, Unsir Meun... Brechen aber unsir Herze nicht. What I was able to get as the translation is our walls don't break, but our hearts do not break. Now, that just doesn't make any sense to me. I looked it over five times because it would make more sense to say our walls do not break, but our hearts do. You know.
Yeah.
It's not a contrast here. They're not saying this yes and this no. They're saying this no and this no. So I wasn't able to really figure out what this is trying to say.
I can offer you no suggestion. I mean, that's very baffling.
Again, I liked that the slogan that they're basically showing towards the Swiss are our walls do not break. That works.
Mm.
You know, that makes sense. But how does that fit into our hearts don't break? You know, that's the thing that gets me here. Because the word unseer is our. Okay, that I checked. And morin, or moorn, M-A-U-E-R, okay, means walls. Okay, so we got our walls, and then brechen, which basically sounds like someone just clearing their throat. Break. Okay, and then, so maybe it's saying our walls do break? Because nicht means don't. That I know. So, one second. Let's just continue going word by word. So, aber means but. Okay. Then we get unsirgen, which means our, and herzen, nicht. So, maybe what they're saying is maybe to translate, that's really weird. Because what it sounds to me that it should be saying is our walls may break, but our hearts will not.
Yeah, that makes some kind of sense. That actually
makes more sense. But, you know, when I did Google Translate, it didn't tell me that, which is pretty strange. Maybe they got something, maybe I miswrote something at the time. I don't know.
I mean, it's entirely possible that what got painted on the side of that barn was painted up there by a set designer who had as flimsy a grasp as German as we do, and it was something that, you know, didn't really make sense, and, you know, something they didn't expect people to be examining in microscopic detail 60 years in the future. So the ability to not make sense of it might actually be just a result of the fact it never made sense to start with.
Right, but okay. So when I look at it via Google Translate and I take out the last word "nicht," okay, then it just says our walls break, but our hearts. And then, but if I add "nicht" in there, then it puts the "don't" on both of them. So I have a feeling that what it should be is our walls may break, but our hearts will not.
That makes a kind of sense. I want you to paint that on a barn, but that makes more sense. There you go.
Maybe it's taunting at, you know, they're at the border. They might say you might be able to break through our lines, but you're not going to be able to break our spirit.
But the Swiss were keeping well out of World War II, so of all the threats to Germany at that point, I don't think Switzerland was foremost among them.
Yes, that's true. Okay, it was interesting. You know, I always find it interesting trying to translate, you know, little signs here and there to see if they actually make sense. This one sort of makes sense. We'll give them a little bit of credit for that one. But as you said, it's pointed at the wrong border. But that's fine. So then we the two motorcycles that are in pursuit. Hiltz looks around. He looks back behind him at who's chasing him. And then he looks to the left. He doesn't look to the right where the fence is. You know, so what's he debating? Should I go back or should I, you know, continue away from the border? You know, that...
It is a little bit hard to work out what McQueen is looking for at this particular moment. It's almost like, oh, I get to the border and then, maybe he's just like, okay, you know, he hasn't actually thought that final step of, okay, how am I going to get through it or across it? And maybe that's what's going through his mind here is he's kind of like got to the very last step and it's like, oh, okay. How do I do this last bit? Right.
And then he looks in the other direction and sees two more motorcycles coming at him from that direction. So maybe that's what it is. He was looking in that direction to see if he can get by there. He sees that he can't go down that part of the road because there are two motorcycles coming from there. You see, again, Henley and Colin stole a plane and no one chases after them. Hiltz steals one motorcycle and he's got four motorcyclists after him. So I guess a motorcycle is a much more, is a higher commodity. Nazi Germany, the trainer plane.
Clearly, all the evidence on screen in this film tells us that.
So then he basically just decides that he's going to take off in the... So I love how he pushes himself off. You know, like when you see a horse counting, so like he moves his leg two times on the ground in order to push himself off into the field. And then he...
It's a nice minute of motoring that we get here. I enjoy...
Tomorrow we'll get even more.
Yeah. I could watch, you know, how, you know, people create these like very slowed down sort of, you know, videos. I could watch a very, you know, slowed down video of just Steve McQueen sort of motorcycling over the undulating German countryside here. I think, you know, it could almost be if you put it in a gallery, you could probably, you know, convince the public that this was some form of video installation.
Yeah, well, just save the minute, you know, and you can just keep watching that minute over and over, and you'll see it.
until that exhibition opens, I'll do that instead.
There you go. I look forward to coming and visiting England to see that exhibition when you open it up. At this point, we see another motorcyclist in pursuit. Who does a very interesting and slick move. He misses the crossroad, slows himself down with his leg, does a circular motion with, you know, in order to do a U-turn on the bike, and then goes back around in order to continue on at the crossroad.
Just showing off, really, isn't he, at this moment? Whoever's on that, the stuntman on that motorcycle.
Yeah, now the question is, who is that stuntman? Because there are rumors that it is actually Steve McQueen.
Yes, because apparently he did quite the, you know, he was dressing up as a German officer and doing some of the motorcycle, you know, something doing, being the rider of some of the other motorcycles in the scene. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't look like McQueen to me, but, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, basically, from what I've heard, he chased himself in one point via movie magic.
Brilliant.
That he was able to, you know, he was one of the German soldiers, and it would make sense that it's actually the one that we just saw do that move, because on the one hand he's showing off, on the other hand he's got goggles, so you can't see his face.
Yeah, well, I'll have to go back and have another look.
I'll never be able to figure it out whether it really is him or not, but you never know. And then, I mean, that motorcyclist overtakes the motorcycle with the sidecar that turned on crossroad before him. So again, it could be Steve McQueen trying to show off and pass the other, you know, or it could also have been Bud Elkin showing off. You know, it could have been either of them. That it's always a possibility. And then we get another shot of Hiltz driving through the countryside, ruining the grass, because you see you can see the track marks that he's making. And then what's great is he comes up the hill and you see him bouncing the motorcycle up the hill as he's coming up, which great. And he's coming right towards the camera and then just misses the camera and goes like right by it. Again, showing off. No question about that.
Yeah, he's definitely, McQueen's loving to ride a motorcycle on screen in this movie. Obviously, he was a massive motorcycle fan in real life, and he's clearly relishing the opportunity to ride one here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene that was cut out of the original script that when they were still in the prison camp, there was a motorcycle officer that was standing by his motorcycle outside of the gate, and Hiltz walks up to him and starts chatting him up about what type of motorcycle it is, and is trying to one-up him on all of the things that this guard is telling him. You know, similar to the conversation that Henley has with Werner, you know, how many Boy Scouts How many Boy Scout certificates did you get? Badges did you get? And he says, "Oh, I had 18." He goes, "Oh, I had 19 or 19 and 20. I don't remember." So it was a similar type of scene, which, again, I know why they cut it out, but it's just funny to think about, because McQueen was very adamant that there'd be as many motorcycle shots of him as possible. And then we get to see him riding off towards the direction of Switzerland as the minute cuts off. You have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I'm all good on this minute.
All right, so why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. If you want to find out more about Films Where Helicopters Explode, come and check out our website, explodinghelicopter.com. We're also a podcast, so you can find us on wherever you get your pods. Just look for Exploding Helicopter. Or come say hello to me on social media. I'm mostly on Twitter. So, come and say hi to me there at Chopper Fireball.
All right. Sounds great. You can get in touch with us by going to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Twitter account is Great Escape MXM. Our Facebook group is Bueller, and our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!
Everyone, because we're winding down and we have less than 30 episodes left, I decided I'm going to do something very special for the final episode of this podcast. If anyone can please send us any questions, we're going to do a Q&A section, me and one or two other guests. So if you have any questions about The Great Escape, or about doing a Movies by Minute podcast, or about me, or anything that you want to ask, it doesn't make a difference. You can ask us questions. And once we record episode 172, we will answer all of your questions, get them to us as quickly as possible. You know where to send them, as a private message to Facebook, to Twitter, or you can send them to email any which way, that we can see the questions and no one else will see them, and we will answer them live for you. Thanks a lot, everyone.